I'm here with Alexander McCurse, editor-in-chief of the Duran. Alexander, let's get right into it. We have the big news of the day, which was the assassination, the drone strike killing of General Soleimani in Iraq, Baghdad airport, outside of Baghdad airport, to be more precise. Let me just get into some of the headlines, Alexander, and some of the tweets, and then you can get into the analysis of this story. Let's start with RT, which says that the title of their article is U.S. Killing of Iranian Commander on Iraqi Soil Violates Terms of U.S. Stationing Troops in the Country, says the Iraqi PM. The interim prime minister of Iraq has condemned the U.S. assassination of a senior Iranian commander, calling it an act of aggression against his country. Qasem Soleimani was killed at Baghdad airport. Soleimani, the commander of the elite Quds force, was killed after his convoy was hit by U.S. missiles. A deputy commander of the Popular Mobilization Forces, PMF, the Iraqi militia collective backed by Iran, was killed in the same airstrike. In a statement on Friday, the caretaker leader of Iraq's protest-challenged government, Adil Abdul Mahdi, said the U.S. assassination operation was a, quote, flagrant violation of Iraqi sovereignty and an insult to the dignity of his country. Alexander, from Javad Zarif, who is the Iranian, I believe, foreign minister. The U.S. act of international terrorism targeting and assassinating General Soleimani, the most effective force fighting Daesh, ISIS, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda et al., is extremely dangerous and a foolish escalation. The U.S. bears responsibility for all consequences of its rogue adventuratism. From John Bolton, Alexander, a tweet. Congratulations to all involved in eliminating Qasem Soleimani. Long in the making, this was a decisive blow against Iran's malign Quds force activities worldwide. Hope this is the first step to regime change in Iran. From Tasman News Agency, Alexander, leader of Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Khomeini on Friday appointed General Esmail Khan as new commander of Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, Quds. And Donald J. Trump, after the strike, tweeted, the American flag, nothing more. And just moments ago, we got another tweet from Donald Trump. Iran never won a war, but never lost a negotiation. Alexander.
Well, let's just start with the last. I'm afraid the last point is simply not true. If you have a knowledge of Iranian history, you know that Iran has actually been victorious in many wars, including wars that extend back hundreds, thousands of years. So anyway, putting that entirely to one side, some of these comments, the Russian comments, are reasonably measured. And I think we should be. I think we need to maintain a certain sense of who General Soleimani is, why he is important, what his actual and overall role was. Now, General Soleimani was the commander of the Al-Quds force. Quds, by the way, refers to Jerusalem. It's the Arab word for Jerusalem. And the Quds force is a kind of mix, special forces force that has been used by Iran to promote its international foreign policy in the Middle East. So it operates on a kind of covert basis. It's rather large. There are vast differences as to exactly how big it is. Some people put its size at around 1,500 men, others at about 10,000. Still others put it at the level of 20,000 men. But it is not the totality of the armed forces of Iran. The person who commands it, who was General Soleimani, is not in command of the armed forces of Iran. That person who commands the Al-Quds force is not the second most powerful official in Iran, as I have been reading some breathless commentary say, and he is not in charge of overall Iranian foreign or defense or military policy. He is an official, a very senior official, within Iran's very large and very complex defense establishment. Now, can I just say about General Soleimani himself, he's been in charge of the Quds Force for a very long time. He began to attract attention around 2015, when the Iranian media itself started to build him up as this genius who was leading the battle against ISIS. Notice Zarif, the Iranian foreign minister, talking about Soleimani being the man who defeated Daesh. Daesh is, of course, another word for ISIS. It is the word that is preferred in Iran to describe ISIS. The Iranians built up the legend of Soleimani as the person who single-handedly almost defeated ISIS in Syria and Iraq. Now, needless to say, that is also a vast exaggeration. The US was involved, the Syrian army was involved, the Russians were involved. The defeat of ISIS was the work of many people, not just of General Soleimani. But the result of all of that, of General Soleimani being promoted by the Iranians as this, you know, tremendous mastermind of the conflict against ISIS, is that he became a very visible military leader. And of course, a military leader who conducts covert operations, who is made very visible and is promoted into a kind of hero, as the Iranian media did promote General Soleimani as a kind of hero, inevitably and unavoidably in time becomes a marked man. And I have read articles, I've read interviews with General Soleimani, by General Soleimani himself, in which he acknowledged that this was the case and accepted that there was a very high probability that he would be killed at some point. So this is not unexpected. It's not come like a bolt from the blue. The US has been dueling with Iran now for a very long time. This individual, this official, had become, as I said, was a very prominent and important official, carrying out work on the ground for Iran. Perhaps not quite as important as people are being led to think today, but nonetheless important and prominent enough to become a target. And it was inevitable that sooner or later, the US and Israel, which feel that they have been bested by Iran in many conflicts in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, would come after the man who is most publicly identified in the Middle East as the author of their defeats. So that's why you hear people like John Bolton crowing about his death. That's why you read people like General Petraeus, the former head of the CIA, calling him an evil, calling Soleimani an evil and malignant figure. But as I said, we should not be too carried away by this. It is part of the escalating war, the tapestry of this military conflict, this intelligence and security conflict that is now raging throughout the Middle East between the United States and Iran. And the Iranians have already replaced General Soleimani, as we also heard you say. And I have no doubt that the intelligence and security apparatus of which General Soleimani was a part, and which, as I said, is very extensive, the Iranian intelligence and security apparatus, it will now continue and perhaps even move into overdrive in exactly the way that it was before. So this is an important event. It is a key event. We will discuss its implications a little more deeply, but we need to have an understanding of who it is who has just been killed and realize that sooner or later, something like this was likely to happen to him.
Right. This is the fog of war, Alexander, and the world has now been introduced to Soleimani. I've been watching a lot of mainstream media outlets in the U.S., and they've been now portraying Soleimani as some mastermind of terror, and that he orchestrated the deaths of thousands of Americans and orchestrated terror attacks all over the Middle East. I mean, you never heard this 2-3 days before this incident. So all of a sudden, the media is in overdrive pushing this narrative. And I think there's a lot of false narratives being portrayed in the media. Another one that I heard often, Alexander, which I would like you to comment on, is the fact that, you know, we caught him in Baghdad airport, and that is proof that he was up to no good and he was behind the protests and the strike against a contractor and all these things that were going on in Iraq outside the U.S. embassy recently. Where the fact of the matter is that it was a pretty, he wasn't traveling in secret. It was a pretty routine flight. I believe he was traveling from Lebanon. I believe the Iraqi defense minister or security officials wanted to meet with him. Once again, this wasn't some secretive meeting that was planned or some, you know, unknown about flight that was taking place. This was a pretty well documented out in the open flight that was happening from Lebanon to Baghdad on the way back to Iran. So that was another false narrative that's now being presented as, you know, we caught him. We caught him in Baghdad. We eliminated him. You know, the secret's out. He was the guy behind all this unrest in the U.S. embassy.
Well, you see, this is the problem. And I really do want to go back to, you know, who he was again. I have known about General Soleimani for a very long time because I'm the kind of person who spends all his time reading all the news reports that come out of the Middle East. If you followed Iranian media publications, media outlets. You mentioned Tasmin News, Press TV, Fars, the Fars News Agency, all of those. He is a regular. He is somebody that was constantly being referred to. He was in Turkey, by the way, I remember, just after the coup against Erdogan, and Erdogan was meeting him there. So, I mean, you know, he is a person who the Iranians themselves built up into this semi-mythical figure. But he does not have that overarching importance that I think many people in the US are being told now that he does. I mean, I know I always followed him. I always saw what he was doing. Obviously, he was a very capable covert operations officer. But a covert operations officer who attracts so much publicity, especially in a place like the Middle East, is, as I said, almost by definition, a marked man. And that is what General Soleimani was. And the idea that, you know, General Soleimani all by himself, you know, like some Dr. No or Blofeld in Iran, was controlling terrorism across the Middle East, I think people really do need to put aside a little bit of what they see, you know, in James Bond movies, and be a little bit more realistic about the way the world actually works. Iran is not, you know, it doesn't begin and end with General Soleimani. It is a vast country. It's a big country, 80 million people, with a very, very complicated and very large intelligence, security, and defense establishment, of which Soleimani himself was only a part. Now, about what he did, Soleimani had two roles. He was, firstly, as I said, a covert operations officer. He was in charge of lots of covert operations, about which, incidentally, we don't know a great deal, because the nature of covert operations is that we don't know very much about the kind of things that he was doing. But he was also an important diplomat. You see, this is the trouble with the Middle East. People who occupy various important positions in Middle Eastern governments often have roles that extend beyond the assigned positions that they have. He was a man with considerable diplomatic skills, and he was often used by the Iranians as a kind of emissary to various governments and groups. So he had lots of contacts, for example, with the Kurds particularly the Kurds in Iran, in Iraq, sorry. He was also undoubtedly somebody who had interests in Lebanon and in with Hezbollah and with the government of Lebanon. But I mean, he always operated in these, when he did his diplomatic work, entirely in the open. As you rightly said, he would travel to one, from one country to another as openly as any other Iranian diplomat or any other Iranian official carrying out a diplomatic role would. And it is extremely important to understand that he was passing through Baghdad on official business for the Iranian government at the invitation of the Iraqi government. Now, the thing that is perhaps most dangerous about this event is that with the United States now killing a senior Iranian official on Iraqi territory at a time when he was due to meet senior Iraqi officials, the United States is not only acting entirely contrary to Iraqi national sovereignty, but it is behaving in a way which is treating Iraq as, if you like, the battleground for some great battle, some great conflict between Iran and itself. Now, that is, it seems to me, very unwise. And it's very unwise for a number of reasons. Firstly, in such a conflict, two-thirds of the Iraqi population who are Shia are likely to favor Iran. So the United States, which has only around 7,000 troops in Iraq, could very easily find itself severely outmatched on the ground in Iraq. And of course, it threatens the stability of Iraq itself. And Iraq is a very unstable country. There's been protests against the government, which are now subsiding because Iraqi opinion is consolidating behind the government in response to this attack on Iraqi national sovereignty. And of course, within this very volatile country, which is Iraq, I come back to what I'm saying. I've said before in our previous video, you cannot assume that an attack on an American base, which is what happened a couple of days ago and which led to this sequence of tit-for-tat attacks, you cannot say that these attacks, this particular attack, was actually carried out by anyone of the many actors that you can find in Iraq without a proper investigation. There's been no investigation. So we mustn't assume that the Iraqis necessarily, the Iraqi military necessarily carried out the attack, or this Iraqi militia carried out this attack, or that the Iranians were behind that attack, or that General Soleimani ordered it. I would have thought it most unlikely, by the way, that he did order it, given that he was in Lebanon, apparently, at the time when it happened. We mustn't make these assumptions, because they are only assumptions. But by making those kind of assumptions and by reacting in this kind of way, we risk making these things into self-fulfilling prophecies with, as I said, Iraq consolidating on a pro-Iranian, anti-American agenda as Iraqis start to feel that the United States is using their country as a battleground to fight Iran. Not a wise thing to do.
Right. I'm concerned here, Alexander, because looking at the evidence and the facts and then seeing how the media is portraying this, it seems that the neocons and the neoliberals are pushing the U.S. to a conflict with Iran. Yes. And it seems at the moment, and it's hard to, obviously, we don't know what's going through Trump's head, but so far, Trump is playing along with this. Right. At least that's what it seems like, right, judging by his two tweets. Once again, we can't make the assumption that he is going to buy into this. But It looks like the U.S. is drifting towards a conflict with Iran, whether it's before the elections or after the elections, who knows? And I say that listening to you and looking at the evidence, the media is portraying this as some U.S. intelligence, military, coordinated victory because they somehow got Soleimani, you know, traveling in secret to Iraq and, you know, they took him out when nothing is further from the truth. They're portraying him as some sort of mastermind of terror when nothing is further from the truth. And you just said it right now that this was an Iranian official traveling out in the open. Everyone knew where he was. And the U.S. took him out. And so to me, it seems that this is another way to push the Trump White House into conflict with Iran, because the anticipation is that Iran will retaliate. And with that retaliation will come an escalation. Eventually, one escalation after another will lead to a conflict. I mean, they're waiting for Trump to take the bait here. And that's the fear, that he's going to take the bait, because this was, from listening to you, this was an easy man to target.
Yeah, well, indeed, absolutely. Of course he was. I mean, that, as I said, this is something which he himself, by the way, as I said, I come back to General Soleimani, a covert operations officer who operates so openly in such a dangerous region is, as I said, you know, putting himself in danger. But looking at this from the other side, attacking a senior Iranian official on a diplomatic mission, who is there at the invitation of a supposedly allied government, the Iraqi government is supposed to be allied to the United States. At the moment when he is supposed to be going to meet the officials of that government, I mean, that is an extraordinary brazen thing to do, an extraordinarily dangerous thing to do, I would say, in this region. Now, first of all, I do wonder, actually, what kind of intelligence, what kind of information Donald Trump is being given. I mean, does he really believe that Qasem Soleimani is this, Dr. No figure who is responsible for the death of thousands of Americans? I mean, which thousands of Americans? I mean, this is, by the way, another, I mean, I'm asking this question because, of course, most of the people the United States has been fighting in the Middle East have been Sunni terrorists. I mean, they were Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which was formerly led by Abu Mutab al-Zarqawi. And then when that eventually morphed into ISIS, you know, it was led by ISIS. Now, these terrorist groups, Al-Qaeda in Iraq and ISIS, had nothing to do with Soleimani. Soleimani didn't control them. They were very opposed to Soleimani. So, you know, on what basis is it being alleged that Soleimani killed, you know, dozens of Americans? I'm not clear about this.
Can I answer that? From what I saw, and you can comment on it, from watching a lot of news media analysis on this, they're tying Soleimani all the way back to the Iraq invasion and WMD, saying that he was behind, one of the people behind, you know, the resistance to the U.S. invasion in Iraq, and that he, you know, he organized much of the resistance that killed American troops that were invading Iraq at the time. So they're taking it all the way back to those events.
Well, this is exactly why I referred to, you know, Al-Qaeda in Iraq as it then was, and Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, because in fact, Iran and Soleimani were not responsible for organizing the resistance to the US in Iraq. The Shia community, which was led and controlled at that time, as I very well remember, not by General Soleimani, who, as I said, was a middle-ranking official in the Iranian intelligence and security apparatus. The Shia community in Iraq was led by the religious leader, their religious leader, Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani. And al-Sistani actually entered into a de facto, if you like, alliance against al-Qaeda in northern Iraq with the US. And when the US was finding itself facing this very well organized and very murderous Sunni Muslim insurgency, it was, as I said, the Shia forces at the bidding of al-Sistani and with the support of Iran that managed to bring the situation under some kind of control. This is you have to go back and reread and restudy the story of that war. But the major battlegrounds during the US occupation of Iraq were not the Shia cities. They were not places like Basra. They were places in the north, Sunni cities like Fallujah and Mosul. That was where the major fighting was. And it was also in Baghdad. And one of the most terrible things that happened during that war was that the US was facing a major terrorist Sunni al-Qaeda-led offensive in Baghdad. And eventually what happened was that al-Sistani and Shia religious leader, Muqtada al-Sadr, released Shia militiamen on the Sunni in Baghdad. And there was an extraordinary hecatomb of violence and murder and killing, which in fact crushed the Sunni uprising that had been fighting the Americans. There's a very, very complex picture. But, you know, I wouldn't say that at that time Soleimani's target was the US. What the Iranians wanted to do was that they wanted to defeat the Sunni insurgency in the north that was fighting the US in order to bring the Shia to power, in the knowledge that the Shia would align Iraq with Iran. So the Iranians are playing a completely different game at that time from the one that is being attributed to them. They capitalized on US mistakes. The entire war, in my opinion, the entire invasion of Iraq was a mistake. They capitalized on those mistakes. They exploited them very cleverly and intelligently, and Soleimani was a part of that. But they were not fighting the United States at that time. They were very careful not to fight the United States at that time. And in fact, as we all know, there were complex negotiations which eventually ended with the JCPOA, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which was agreed by the US and Iran under the Obama administration with a view to ending the Iranian a nuclear program such as it was. So, you know, I think it's important to make these historical points. Soleimani was a brilliant covert intelligence officer, extremely good at what he did. He was a very skilled diplomat. He was not the overarching head of terrorism in the Middle East. He was not the overarching head of the resistance, the organizer of the resistance to the United States after the invasion of Iraq in, you know, by the W. Bush administration in 2003. And he was in Baghdad passing through quite openly, quite publicly, at the invitation of the Iraqi government, going to be meeting Iraqi government officials. Let us not over exaggerate who this man was. Let us not run away with the false picture of the history of that conflict. And let us not, as I said, fall into the trap, which I think far too many people in the United States do, of seeing everything, as I said, around particular personalities. The Iranian publicity, the Iranian propaganda machine, if you like, built up to some extent the myth of General Soleimani. That's not a reason why everyone else, including the US, should fall for that myth. It's simply not true. If you actually follow the events in the Middle East closely, this is a false picture that is now being presented.
Yeah, the key word that you said, Alexander, is trap. And I guess the question that I have for you right now is what happens next? Yeah. I think that the killing of that contractor, mercenary, whoever that was, that one individual, is called into question in my mind. We don't really know who did what, how he was killed. That's my own thought. But that singular event and the over disproportionate reaction by the US, which I think is deliberate in that they killed 35 to 45 people right after that killing. Yes. Then you had the embassy stormed. Then you had the Apache helicopters, you know, coming in and the reinforcements coming in to quell those protesters. The media immediately jumped on this story and this narrative that Iran is behind the whole thing.
Yes.
And now you have this killing of Soleimani, where you've just presented the facts as to who he was and how he was traveling in such an open fashion, but the media is portraying a completely different story.
Yes.
That this was a military and intelligence victory, and they spotted him in Iran. He was conspiring with the Iraqis. And, you know, this proves that he was behind the whole embassy protesting, and they were going to do harm to Americans inside of that embassy. We got him. We took him out. This is a victory. And now they're waiting. The neocons, the neoliberals, the warmongers are waiting for Iran's next move. This is all, in my mind, deliberate. And my question is, what happens next? Will Iran take the bait? And if they take the bait, that's exactly what the warmongers want. They want Iran to retaliate. And when and if they do, you know this is just going to escalate even further.
Well, this is it, because I actually entirely agree with you. I mean, the whole sequence of events now is starting to look very much as if someone is trying to provoke Iran. So as you rightly said, you have this attack on this base. And I really want to stress this again. We don't know who was responsible for that attack. But it does seem to me that that attack has been used as a pretext to do various things. One was these very, very heavy airstrikes against this militia group, which, it needs to be stressed again, is a part of the Iraqi military. It is a part of the Iraqi armed forces. It's a militia group. It's a Shia militia group, but it operates within the umbrella of the Iraqi defense and military establishment. And of course, we have that attack. And now I have to say, we have this attack on Soleimani in what looks to me like a very carefully pre-planned assassination, because we talked about the fact that he was traveling in the open, which he was. So the United States would have known several days, at least, before he flew through Baghdad, or was going to fly through Baghdad, that he would be there. His location would not have been a mystery. And in a way, and this is what I think is rather extraordinary, is you see John Bolton almost admitting to this. I mean, he talks about how all of this had been, you know, prepared, you know, well in advance. So it does look to me as if someone, go on, yes?
He says it, Alexander, sorry to interrupt you. He says it, once again, I quote his tweet, long in the making. John Bolton's words, long in the making.
Well, there you go. So, as I said, this is obviously, it almost gives away the whole story, in effect. I mean, which is that clearly there is someone trying to push an agenda for war against Iran. Now, the response to the initial airstrikes, as we know, was the storming of the US embassy. But note that went only so far. The embassy was stormed. but they didn't actually go into many of the sort of more secluded areas. None of the officials or people who were there were actually taken hostage, and nobody was killed, and people were told to withdraw. So even that response, a strong response, a visible response, was a very carefully calibrated response. And I should say, I've no doubt that that response, that the Iranians had some role in it. Now, what are they going to do in response to Soleimani's death, assassination? I think that the Iranians are highly intelligent people when it comes to understanding military, foreign policy, intelligence policy. I think they know exactly what the US is trying to do, or rather whoever it is who's behind these attacks on them is trying to do, and that there's a concerted attempt to try and provoke them into a reaction which will then lead to a further reaction, which will then result in a war. I think they understand that very well. They do have their own pressures. I mean, Soleimani is an extremely well-known figure in Iran. I mean, he may have been unknown in the US, until a few days ago, the day before yesterday. But every Iranian who follows the news has heard of General Soleimani. As I say, Iran itself built this man up into a sort of living myth. The Al-Quds force and all these people, all its multiple people within the Iranian military, they will be feeling very angry and they will be itching to carry out some kind of response. But I think the political leadership, people like Ayatollah Khamenei, who's the supreme leader, who's a very calculating man, President Rouhani, Foreign Minister Zarif, they are the people who are ultimately in control. And I think they will move very carefully in response to all of this. They know perfectly well that in a straight war, Iran is not a match for the United States. They do not want to get drawn into an open conflict with the United States. I think they will prepare their ground very carefully. They will look for some way to retaliate, but that they will retaliate in their own time, probably not very quickly, and they will do it in a way that is both proportionate and deniable, as we saw with the drone attack on the Saudi Aramco facility, which I would remind all viewers, I have expressed the view in previous programs that though the Houthis claimed responsibility, I've no doubt that they got some help for it from Iran. So the Iranians will know what will think this through, and they will prepare their response very carefully. They are benefiting in an important way from all of this, which is a point which we mustn't overlook, and which the Iranians themselves are aware of. Firstly, it is consolidating Iraqi opinion behind the Iraqi government at a time when the Iraqi government itself was facing challenges. And it is also pushing the Iraqi government closer to Iran. So, and there are now already increasing demands in Iraq, for US troops to be removed from that country. So they are winning on the diplomatic front within Iraq itself. But they're also consolidating their international position. There were naval exercises in the Gulf of Oman involving the Iranian Navy, the Chinese and Russian navies. The Russians have published a very short but very strong statement supporting Iran in relation to the assassination of Soleimani. They've actually sent condolences to Iran for his killing. The Chinese have also made very clear that they were horrified by this kind of action. And so the Iranians, from an Iranian point of view, one can't say that they're not actually gaining some ground from this. And I think the Iranians are sophisticated enough to understand that if they now do something extreme, it will only play into the hands of whoever it is in Washington or Jerusalem, or probably both places, who's trying to provoke them.
Right. Alexander Mercurius, editor-in-chief of the Duran. We will be following this story as it develops as well, so expect more videos out of this story in Iraq and Iran. Guys, subscribe to the channel. PayPal, Patreon, Subscribestar. Donate to us. It helps us out. Alexander, we still got the DRN20 running, and we've got the two ebooks on Ukrainegate and Epstein as well.
Indeed we do. And what extraordinary and excellent books those are, going into all the details of those two very complicated and intricate scandals and trying to sort of clear out the fog that's been created around them. In the case of Ukrainegate, I mean, you know, we talk on this program about serious things. We've just been giving you a video in which we've been talking about the war and the conflicts that are happening there, and we're trying to analyze them and explain the facts. It's been so bizarre to deal with this substantial, real issues, and then to have to return to Ukrainegate, which is a scandal about absolutely nothing. There is actually no crime there. Even the Democrats admit that. There's not even evidence of wrongdoing there. There are no witnesses either. The person who came along and started this whole thing, this mythological whistleblower, he wasn't even a witness. So, I mean, you know, we go through in our book about Ukrainegate all the facts. We actually look at the facts. We discuss the real story behind Ukrainegate. And we explain, firstly, what a completely phony impeachment that is. And we also provide its overall context in the form of the ongoing struggle of the Democrats and of sections of the US deep state to try to remove Donald Trump from office, whose election in 2016 they've never accepted. And as for Epstein, what we have done there is, again, we've gone beneath the fog, or rather the curtain of silence that some people are trying to pull down over the story, because that, unlike Ukrainegate, is a real scandal. There are real victims. There are people who were horribly treated and injured, and who will be injured for all their lives as a result of what Epstein and his accomplices did. And yet Epstein was able to do it all in full public view, with all of, you know, the top people of American society coming to his parties, accepting his invitations, coming to his ranch and to his island and, you know, in his mansion in New York, and seeing all the things that were going on. And he was able to do all of that for years and years and years, until eventually, finally, because some of his victims brought court cases against him, it eventually caught up with him. But still, we don't know the real story. We don't know the full truth about what was actually going on, who Epstein was, how he made his money, how he was able to do all this in clear view. And that's a real scandal with real victims. And yet, see the disproportion in media coverage. Ukrainegate, this phony scandal about nothing, column inches, you know, vast piles of coverage, endless TV debates about something that has no reality. Epstein, virtually nothing. Every attempt that is made to discuss Epstein, as we have experienced on the Duran, faces massive censorship issues. So that's what our two books are about. But of course, we don't just have books on our shop. We have all sorts of other amazing things. We have our magic mugs that we drink from, and which have become so famous and have become so popular with so many of our viewers. We have our wonderful shirts, like this long sleeve t-shirt I'm wearing at the moment. I should explain again that I'm in the Alps in Haute-Savoie. I've just been walking my dogs. In fact, I just slipped on the ice walking my dogs whilst my wife was skiing. And here I am, feeling absolutely warm and perfect because I'm wearing this magnificent, wonderful 100% cotton Duran shirt. And we've got all sorts of other wonderful shirts that you can find long-sleeved, short-sleeved, our amazing polo shirts, which I've worn to events here. And of course, we've also got hoodies and stickers and hats and other amazing things. I believe our discount is still functioning. DRN20 is the code. These are wonderful things to own. These are wonderful things to give as gifts. So you can learn from our books. You can have the pleasure of owning all our other merchandise. And Alex will tell you how to do it.
DRN20, 20% off all merchandise. Put that code in on the checkout page. Alexander Mercurius, Editor-in-Chief of the Durant. Thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.